First up, we'll hear a memoir by Amanda Glasser called Panty Sniffing 101, which reminds us that escaping from your first job after college can be harder than you might think. Amanda managed to do so, but only after enduring some serious discomfort.
My first thought when I read the job description for returns processor with the women's retailer was a secretary who deals with angry people. I pictured stressful phone calls to women who wanted pink bras and had gotten puce bodysuits. I thought of stacks of order papers that needed filing and alphabetizing. I thought Xeroxes, faxes, coffee breaks, and wearing pantsuits. Maybe the pantsuits idea was a little far-fetched. My mother's style choices have always tainted my opinions of professionalism. Nevertheless, I was overqualified for the job, being a fresh graduate of Mills College with a BA in International Relations, with honors, and I desperately needed the money to pay rent on my very first apartment. I bought myself a new shade of lip gloss and decided on pinstripe pants with a blouse for the interview. At the appointed time, 2 weeks after my graduation in the sweltering summer heat of California, I went to the main offices of Title IX Sports, resume in hand. I should have started updating my impressions of returns processor when I realized that the main offices were in the warehouse district of Oakland. I should have started imagining dim lighting and stacks of returned merchandise when I was led through the warehouse itself to the back, where the hiring manager awaited. But it wasn't until I was seated in a precarious broken lawn chair beside a burly lesbian dressed in Teva sandals and a rugby shirt that I actually banished the last thought of wearing pantsuits to work every day. "You want some water?" she asked me. "No, thanks. I was only a little nervous. The hiring manager looked like any one of my classmates for the last 4 years, right down to the golden sun-bleached leg hair that she proudly did not shave. "So you're overqualified, and you went to Mills." The way she said it made me wonder if she was one of my roommate's many conquests. I would have to ask her at a more appropriate time. "So I just want to ask, why do you want this job?" There are 1,000 answers to this question when it comes up in an interview. I think it will be a great opportunity, I would be an asset to the company, why wouldn't I want this job, and so forth. Any one of those probably would have sufficed, but I settled on, because no one else will hire me and I need the money. "Do you know what a returns processor does?" She quirked her eyebrow at me, daring me to lie and say that I did. I shook my head. "I'm guessing angry phone calls," she chuckled. "Some of the time." She took out an Nalgene water bottle and had a long sip. "Most of the time it's opening boxes, folding, putting clothes back where they go in the inventory, that kind of stuff. How much can you bench?" I told her. She made a face. "Really? I thought since you went to Mills you could..." I told her I wasn't on the crew team. "Oh well, you look like you can handle lifting 50 pounds. "I'm flattered that you think so," I said. "Well, bring your social security card tomorrow and we'll get you started. And Amelia..." "Amanda," I said. "Oh, yeah. Well, you'd better get yourself some jeans and a t-shirt. You can take some of the stuff out of the inventory if you don't have anything you're prepared to ruin." And just like that, I had my first job out of college. Somehow it didn't feel like I'd gone very far. I spent day one in training, filling out paperwork, having to call my mom and find out if she was still declaring me as a dependent, and, if so, what number I should mark on the W-2, etc. Around lunchtime, I got my employee number and was allowed to punch in for the very first time on the brand new computer system. My name appeared on screen as Amelia. Day two, my handler, a nice lipstick lesbian named Julie, stacked several boxes in front of me and said, "I'll walk you through it." I was skittish with the box cutter. Like my father, I'm a klutz. But that first day, I got all the boxes open without a single flesh wound. Unfortunately, the second package of the day was a paper UPS wrapper tightly bound over a down parka, both of which I sliced through like butter. "It happens," said Julie. "Wait till you get your first set of panties in a business envelope. Those are fun." About then, I thought to ask if we were provided latex gloves or face masks. Julie made a face and asked why I would want such a thing. I shoved aside mental images of anthrax-induced asphyxiation and poison ivy-laced sports tops. "No reason," I said. This was about the time I opened my first package containing a letter. All of the clothing sent out by the retailer had a comment card that the customer could use in case of a return. The options were in multiple choice. A, wrong item, with the slots you could fill in the product number of the correct item. B, wrong size, with a place where you could write the size you wanted. C, damaged, which seemed much the same as D, defective, but both were happily provided. Then there was E, didn't like it. F, changed my mind. And G, other. I didn't see why you would need to explain your return so thoroughly, but apparently in women's retail, it's all about choices. This one had been marked E for didn't like it, and from behind the comment card, a pink post-it slipped out. Julie nodded to it, wanting me to pick it up. "I must say," said the note, "that I am very disappointed with what you people call banana yellow. Have you never seen bananas before? Sincerely, an unhappy customer." Julie smiled in relief. Wow, she was nice. Aside from opening the return package and handling customer dissatisfaction, we also had to care for the merchandise. Items become crumpled in transit and sometimes need a good steaming to get out the wrinkles. Items also become putrid after having been tried on by someone who hasn't bathed in a while, or puked on by a cat, and need to be dry cleaned. Items can also lose buttons or zippers and need the steady hand of a seamstress. And if it's worse than any of that, just throw it in the discount bin, said Julie. We purge it at the end of each season. Day in and day out after those first 2 days of training, I opened a package, laid out the clothing, and checked the return card. I examined the clothing for rips, stains, missing buttons, and other such mishaps. Next, I smelled the clothing. This part was the most terrifying, and had to determine if the smell was bad, good, or negligible enough to repackage the clothing as new. This is why I stopped ordering clothes online. Next, I had to run a lint roller over everything, even if it was the type of thing that didn't take well to lint rollers, like the hybrid nylon mesh that ripped on contact with sticky surfaces. Lastly, I sent the clothing on to be handled by the refurbishment department, or restored in the inventory by one of the stock people. Or I chucked it into the discount bin, never to see the light of day again. The job was easy, and by easy I mean mind-numbing. Whole days would drift past while I opened, folded, sniffed, and labeled seemingly endless amounts of shirts, skirts, panties, bras, and sundresses. It took me only 4 days to plow through my entire music collection on my iPod, and the endless drone of NPR on an office radio resulted in my first incident of cutting my finger with a box cutter. The most exciting day I can recall is the time when my coworker put on the World Cup soccer broadcast so we could hear the USA losing to the Czech Republic. Still, the job paid the rent and kept me away from my crazy roommates. I could afford, barely, to treat my boyfriend to a sit-down dinner and buy myself DVDs so I didn't have to pirate them off the internet. And it felt good not to have to ask my parents for money. But like with all jobs, even the ones you enjoy, I had bad days. Days where the box pile didn't get any smaller, days where I had a headache that wouldn't go away. There were also days when I did get angry customer phone calls and had to placate enraged women with promises of store credit and flattering remarks about their taste. All lies. And then there were the days when the job itself was out to get me. First, there was a note with the return card reading, "This shirt is labeled as a medium, but it's actually a small." I had to resist writing a response of, "Congratulations, madam. Your powers of perception are spot on," and sent the shirt to refurbishment to get the deodorant stains out. Second, I got a bra stuffed into an envelope with the return card marked D for defective. I went to chuck it in the discount bin when Julie stopped me and asked me what made the bra defective. I held up the garment so she could see the tire tracks over the left cup. She ran over it with a moped, and I guess it wasn't up to par. Third, on a rainy day towards the end of my fourth week at work, I opened a box containing a rumpled linen skirt. A note had been stapled to the crotch which read, "This was not sewn with gender-friendly seams." The reply I drafted inside my head went something like, "Dear madam, or quite possibly sir, this is a women's retailer. I'm sure you can find something more to your liking throughout the San Francisco area." Fourth, I got an angry phone call from a woman who ordered a bra and apparently was sent one of the bras from the discount box. I was made to, on speakerphone, because I wasn't about to suffer the woman's rage alone, listen in great detail about the discoloration around the armpits, the beading on the bra straps, and the fact that it was the wrong size in the first place. I wanted to ask her how the thing had smelled, but thought better of it and got my manager to make amends. Then the nail in the coffin. On my birthday, which I was forced to work, I got a little black box, the kind of thing you might find a watch in. There was a note taped to the outside that read, ... I opened the box against every shrieking instinct in my body. Inside lurked a torn red lace thong that appeared to have yellow semen crusted on the crotch. That day I scrubbed my hands till they bled and gave my 2 weeks' notice. I landed a job in the video games industry only 2 days later. In the interview, when asked why I wanted the job, I said, "Because it's got to be better than my last job." The interviewer asked me to elaborate, which I did, with a modest summary of the thong incident. I got the call back 10 minutes after the interview. Even if I hadn't been so lucky with the video games job, or if I had found it to be gruelingly intensive work, which it wasn't, I'm not really worried about jobs anymore. Finding them can be hard, doing them can be boring, and I've never heard of a job where you didn't feel demoralized once in a while, especially if you get laid off as 20-somethings are prone to. But ultimately, after you've been a professional panty sniffer, after you've set your nose to the crotch of a wetsuit and inhaled until the lights dance behind your eyes, what in corporate America could possibly scare you?
Okay, I'm speaking with Amanda Glasser, the author of Panty Sniffing 101, one of the winners of the fall Stanford Storytelling Contest, Narrow Escapes and Getting Caught.
Hi.
Welcome, Amanda. So I thought I'd maybe give you a chance at first to talk a little bit about writing the story, what inspired it, how did you decide to put this experience of yours down in a memoir form?
Well, for the 2.5 months that I worked there, I'd come home every day and just blog this stuff because it got crazy. I mean, I didn't even put half the really great complaints I remember getting in there, like the woman that complained that there was a tag right where her nipple was and it itched her terribly. And why would we put a tag there? She'd been wearing the shirt backwards. So we actually had an office meeting to determine if we should send the shirt back or not, or if that would just make her more mad.
What did you decide?
We decided to just forget about it, and we had to throw it in the discount bin, I think, because she'd, like, ripped a sleeve putting it on. I think that would have been a clue that she'd been putting it on backwards, but no, not really.
It sounds like, sounds as if your experience scarred you in various ways. I have to ask, listening to your story, do you still avoid buying clothes online?
Yes, I avoid it desperately, unless it's something like a hoodie or something. I know that it probably didn't go through that much trauma because of all the things we got back. Jackets never really suffered that much. Pants, sure. Underwear, always. Socks didn't seem to suffer that much either, but generally the jackets were safe. No cats threw up on those.
Was underwear ever steam cleaned and resold?
Well, steam cleaned. I mean, cleaned is a loose term here. We mostly just steamed it to get the wrinkles out. And cleaned, that's a relative term. By cleaned, they got the color to be the original color. I swear they had bottles of whiteout just lined up in the refurbishment department. Kind of alarming. So no, I don't buy intimates online or anything that I might worry about getting a rash from.
It's good to know. Have you ever run over a bra with a moped?
Not that I can remember. I'm seriously considering, though, I want to know how that woman pulled that off. I want to know if she was wearing it when it happened or if she just happened to leave it on the ground or mm-hmm. or what. But that was pretty impressive. And it had to be a moped because the wheel size was just too big for a bike, too small for a proper motorcycle. It was strange. It felt like Sherlock Holmes trying to figure out how this woman had done this to that bra.
We may never know. So let's talk more generally about writing. You said you kept a blog about these experiences and you're interested in journalism. What do you see as sort of the mission of your writing? Do you see writing as something that's always going to be part of your life?
It'll always be a part of my life, but I'm a selfish writer. I write for myself. And, you know, I'm not the person that sits at Starbucks planning to write the next great American novel. That, unless America's interested in panties and video games, no. I mostly just write as a way to express myself, as a way to, you know, trash talk people I'm just sick of and don't have the nerve to speak to in real life that way, and as a way to really be funny and entertain people. Because my mother, the only way she can really keep in contact with me is to read my blogs. So I always tried to dress it up for her as a bit of an audience, but generally I'm writing for me. Mm-hmm. And not everybody finds panties really that funny.
I think the word panties itself is kind of funny.
Oh, it's hilarious. The only thing funnier than that is yanties. Are you familiar with those?
No. What are yanties?
Okay, so in track, you have track shorts that have built-in underwear for the sake of convenience. Yeah. And they call them sliders, I guess, in soccer so that boys' nuts don't slide out. But girls call them yanties, and I don't know why, but that was the accepted vernacular all through track in high school.
I wasn't on the track team myself, so.
Oh, the things you can learn.
Yeah. Do you have a blog you want to share with the world or a website?
Oh, not particularly. I blog for Kotaku now publicly, so you can go there and watch me try to articulate video games, which is almost harder than articulating underwear that's stained and awful and scary. But it's been a really great experience to write for Kotaku because I have to write for an audience. I can't be selfish like I normally am. But my private blog is still a very selfish endeavor and secretly hidden somewhere, although not that secret. I imagine if you dug, you could find it. But hope you like reading about angst because that's pretty much all that winds up in there now.
So you'd point people to the Kotaku blog.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you like video games. What are you doing if you're not reading Kotaku? Don't tell me you're reading Joystick. Shame, shame.
Well, that's a great plug. is there anything else? Are there other aspects of the story that you'd want to talk about or highlight?
Pretty much just to tell people, especially coming out of undergrad, especially from a prestigious university like Stanford or a small college like Mills, you know, get it out of your head that you're going to walk into the dream job straight out. You're going to be hungry. You're going to miss your rent maybe once or twice. You're going to apply to millions of jobs and not get any of them. Don't take it personally and don't give up. because so many Millsbians especially just folded and went straight home to mommy and daddy and still wonder why they couldn't get that job in marketing. No one takes you seriously. You have to keep trying until they do. So just try not to let it get to you. Hang on to the last shred of your self-esteem, although that's kind of impossible sometimes, and eventually you will land a job that doesn't suck.
They're called Millsbians? Amanda Glasser has received a master's in journalism at Stanford.